We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview. The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. What a great day to talk about truth and how truth is a person. We as Christians know the person of God, our creator, our master, our savior. And we need to be concerned about truth and knowing the person of truth more than anything. And so before we get to my special guest this morning in the next segment, I want to rant a little bit today, and bear with me, because you know this is one of those things that I just see conservatives and Republicans overall caring so much more about tribalistic personalities, and I'm not just talking about Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis or whatever, any of the presidential election stuff, but personalities over the truth. And we need to be better than that. We need to, especially Christians, need to be better than that. We should always be on the side of the truth. And if our favorite social media influencer or our favorite broadcaster or favorite politician or whatever goes against the truth, or even is not supporting policy or anything that aligns with the truth, then we need to call that out, even if it goes against somebody that we otherwise support, because that is okay to do. And in fact, that is what we should do. And that's even what we should do in our personal relationships. My family, for example, has never operated on the premise that, like, my parents have never told me growing up, well, Jenna, we support all of your decisions, and even if they're bad, we just love and support and affirm you. And that's what we get from a lot of people who want, from this culture, right? And a lot of the people who say that unconditional love and the love means affirming my decisions even when I'm making terrible mistakes or even when I'm doing things that are actually objectively wrong. It's not just my truth versus your truth. The standard is always God himself, and as he reveals himself not only in Scripture, which is specific revelation, but general revelation, the natural law, the laws of nature and of nature's God, as our founders so beautifully expressed it. So true love is not simply saying, I'm affirming you because I love you, and no matter what you say, the policies you support, the decisions you make, I'm going to affirm you because that's what it means to love you, or that's what it means to support you. That is not what Christians are commanded to do in terms of loving one another and all of the one another's in Scripture. In fact, we're supposed to exhort each other in the commandments of God. We're supposed to be accountable to a local church. We are supposed to bring up one another and uphold one another in the love of God and in the knowledge and grow in the grace of and knowledge of the Lord. I mean, the Bible is replete with not just the suggestion, but the command and the requirement to stand firmly for truth, regardless of our feelings, regardless of our political parties, regardless of, who we love to follow on social media. So this gets me to my example that I want to rant about today, which is libs of TikTok versus Ron DeSantis. And I have no personal stake other than truth in this, and I feel like so many people just in their siloed partisanship either immediately supported Governor DeSantis or immediately supported libs of TikTok. Kaya Raychek, who is the woman who runs libs of TikTok, who is a good personal friend of mine, by the way. So I support both what Libs of TikTok has done, which is simply to hold up a mirror to the left and post their own content, and then they get outraged, and it's hilarious. And this is why, you know, she has risen to a very influential figure. And then, of course, Governor DeSantis, who is doing a lot of great work here in the state of Florida. I'm very grateful he's my governor. So here's what happened. And without caring necessarily to be on one side or the other, I'm not going to pick Libs of TikTok versus Governor DeSantis. That's not my point. My point is that we need to be on the side of the truth. But social media yesterday, of course, took very siloed responses. And if you're on Team DeSantis, then, of course, you're on Team DeSantis. And if you are, you know, MAGA or against DeSantis or a follower of Libs of TikTok, then immediately, you know, this was totally just, you know, her win. And everybody, it seems like, totally ignored the main issue, which is simply the truth. So Libs of TikTok posted on social media a little video with this caption: "This normally quiet, peaceful neighborhood in Florida was shaken this week when three illegals from Guatemala were arrested for forcing a woman into her car and sexually assaulting her." And then she goes on to say, apparently, Florida also gives illegals driver's licenses. So that's actually factually incorrect. Florida does not give illegals driver's licenses. Now, Libs of TikTok either did not do her research, did not contact the governor's office, did not contact any member of the Florida state legislature before putting this out there that Florida gives illegals driver's licenses. So Governor DeSantis quote posted her and said, Libs of TikTok got community noted for lying about Florida law, which not only prohibits illegal aliens from getting driver's licenses, but also prohibits recognition of licenses issued to illegal aliens from other states. Truth shouldn't be a casualty of attempts to generate clicks and engagement farm. So he's right that about Florida law. And he's right that Libs of TikTok did get community noted. There is a community note, which is one of the greatest features that Elon brought to X, by the way, that readers added context and said under the Florida code and actually issued or linked rather to the section of Florida law that Florida does not issue driver's license to illegals. Florida also does not recognize driver's licenses from other states which knowingly issue them to illegal immigrants. Like, for example, my former home state of Colorado. They do that. And even the Republican-led district attorney's office, by the way, that I once worked for as a prosecutor, the rationale that I was given then was that that anyone who drives may potentially get into a car accident. And if illegals are driving and don't have insurance and you can't get insurance without a valid driver's license, then that doesn't protect people that they might harm. So it's better to give a driver's license so that illegals can get insurance to protect other citizens on the highway. That's their rationale. And we can have a whole other conversation about that. But for today, our emphasis is on truth, not necessarily best policy. And the truth, period, regardless of whether you agree with the rationale or not, is that Florida doesn't do this. They won't recognize Colorado driver's licenses that are issued to illegal aliens because they just don't do that in the state of Florida. So Libs of TikTok, after the, I think it was after the community note, but at least at some point, she went in her tweet thread, it was a couple of posts down, and did issue a clarification, but not an apology, and did not delete her initial tweet. And that tweet has gotten millions. I mean, currently, as we're sitting here, it's 5.1 million views. She has a prolific following. And a lot of people don't read tweet threads. They won't see that correction. It's like a, you know, Washington Post or a New York Times that is that will issue a correction, but it's all the way down at the bottom. And people only read the first couple paragraphs. And they're not necessarily going to see that correction, or if they've already read that post, they're not going to see the correction. So does the correction actually do what it's intended to do? Most of the time, the best practice, in my opinion, is to simply delete the tweet. And I've deleted tweets when I've gotten something wrong and somebody has informed me, and I never intend to do that. But there have been a couple of times where I didn't frame it the right way, or I, you know, said something that somebody came and said, no, that's actually not accurate. I'm like, oh, thanks for telling me. Delete it, issue the correction as a separate post so that people can see that. So Libs of TikTok decided not to do that. And that was when kind of all the war broke out, right? Because people are now accusing, people who are fans of Governor DeSantis are accusing Kaya Raychek of being a MAGA shill, and that she's only engagement farming, and this was intended to slight DeSantis because everybody in the comments was talking about it. And then, of course, the libs of TikTok fans are saying, Governor DeSantis, like, what is he doing that, you know, quote tweeting her? And this probably wasn't even him. It's somebody who clearly has a beef with MAGA. And then it's just, it's so ridiculous. And here is my rant. So this is what I posted on my social media. I said, I hate that so-called quote-unquote conservatives defend their favorite tribal personalities instead of the truth. Kaya Raychek is one of us and fighting the good fight. She got one post wrong. Yeah, she should delete the post, but she doesn't deserve to be vilified as a, quote, MAGA shill any more than Governor DeSantis deserves to be vilified for rightly calling out her false post just because it's Kaya instead of a liberal reporter. Be loyal to the truth, not a fallible human personality. Truth is a person. Be loyal to God and God alone. Because here was my other part of this. Because if Governor DeSantis had called out, for example, a Washington Post or New York Times reporter for getting this wrong and just issuing a correction like later down in the tweet thread, conservatives would be all over that going, look at the fake news. And I can't believe how they're not ethical enough to go and actually delete their post, and they'd be piling on. But when it's somebody they like, then it all changes, right? And their perspective totally changes. And it's not dependent on the truth. And it's not dependent on an objective standard of journalistic integrity. It's not dependent on social media misinformation policies. Nothing other than the person who posted it. And this is my problem. This is the problem that conservatives, and particularly Christians, who should be loyal to the person of truth and to truth over any loyalty or fealty to DeSantis or libs of TikTok or anybody else, right? I mean, including me. Like, you know, don't be loyal to me over the truth as listeners. I know a lot of you, you know, write in and you're very encouraging, and the positive, encouraging K-Love style emails, as Tim says all the time. I love and appreciate those. But be loyal to God over loyalty to AFR or to, you know, or to me or to any other personality that you listen to. We need to be loyal to the truth. And if you have a different standard, depending on whether it is libs of TikTok who post this or the Washington Post, that is a problem. We need to always make sure that we have the same objective standard. Otherwise, we are no better than Democrats, because we have seen how Democrats will continue to have all of these double standards, that if it's a conservative that is going out and speaking and speaking their opinions that is against, you know, their perspectives, then those people deserve to be censored and canceled. But when it's somebody who is a leftist, liberal, agenda, you know, rainbow parade, pride club person, you know, that's fine, and they need to be lauded. And we can't have the rules that govern not only our best practices, but of course our rule of law, to be so subjective. And of course, we don't expect good behavior from the leftists, because by definition, leftism is subjective to their agenda, and they don't have those bright line rules. But conservatives need to be better than that. Christians need to be better than that. If we care about the rule of law in this country, and we should, if we care about the Constitution in this country, and we should, if we care about policy and best practices, and we should, then Governor DeSantis is right that truth should not be a casualty of attempts to generate clicks and engagement farm. And so many conservatives, and I know that I'm, you know, speaking to a group that I personally expect more from, and this isn't, you know, just infighting and criticizing conservatives over criticizing liberals, but even the Bible tells us that we can't and shouldn't expect Christian-like or good behavior from sinners, from people who haven't been regenerated in the truth of the gospel of Christ. I don't expect liberals to be particularly trustworthy, right? Because they're not Christians, they're not saved. But for conservatives, and especially those who call themselves Christians and take on the testimony of saying, I am acting Christianly, I expect more from them. Truth should not be a casualty of attempts to generate clicks and engagement farm. So when you are consuming media, don't care so much about who is posting it. Care about whether it is truthful, it's accurate, and it reflects the person of God who is truth. We need to expect more from our own coalition first so that we can have a good and faithful testimony to a lost and sinful and dying world. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Last year, because of you, Preborn's network of clinics saw over 58,000 babies saved. Thank you to all who made this possible. Let's celebrate these precious babies. When Charlotte found out she was pregnant, she was 7 weeks along. In the back of her mind, she thought abortion was the best solution. But after hearing her baby's heartbeat and seeing her beautiful baby on an ultrasound, she chose life. Her heart is filled with gratitude for all of you who made this possible. Each of these babies are truly miraculous, and every day, Preborn celebrates 200 miracles. $28 a month can be the difference between the life and the death of a child. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection that doubles the baby's chance at life. Let's join together and help mothers choose life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
So there was a very important piece in the City Journal that is titled Sex Change Procedures at Texas Children's Hospital. Doctors said that they would stop such medical interventions. Whistleblower documents prove that they haven't. So this is by our good friend Chris Rufo, who's done really excellent work not only here in the state of Florida, but also elsewhere, that is, of course, combating a lot of these issues in DEI and the whole trans agenda from the left. And so this article starts out as last spring, executives at Texas Children's Hospital announced that they would cease performing transgender medical procedures on children, citing potential legal and criminal liability. The hospital's chief pediatrician, Catherine Gordon, an advocate for so-called gender-affirming therapy, abruptly resigned. Chris Rufo says, I've obtained exclusive whistleblower documents showing that despite its public statements, the Houston-based Children's Hospital, the largest in the United States, has secretly continued to perform transgender medical interventions, including the use of implantable puberty blockers on minor children. When reached via email, hospital spokeswoman Kelly Carville responded, we have no comment. So one of those whistleblowers joins me now. This is Dr. Eitan Heim, who was one of the whistleblowers on this sex change issue. So Dr. Heim, thanks so much. And first, give us your background in terms of how you are connected with Texas Children's Hospital and where you're at now.
Yeah, of course, Jenna, thank you for having me on. But this whole story started when I was a surgical resident at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And for people who are unfamiliar with what that is, after you finish 4 years of medical school, you have to go into something called residency training. That's where you choose a specialty like internal medicine or general surgery, and then you spend anywhere from 3 to 5 years training. And in my case, it was general surgery. It's a five-year-long program. It was at Baylor College of Medicine. One of the primary hospitals we work at is Texas Children's. We spend a huge amount of time there. It's an amazing hospital, one of the best ones I've ever worked at, some of the best people. But in 2021, 2022, I had become more aware of this transgender ideology, this idea that you should transition young children who believe that they are of the opposite sex. And I always knew this existed on the fringes of society, like it was very rare. But after COVID, it seemed like it had proliferated to the rest of the country. But you know, you see it happening in California, Oregon, Washington. You don't think it's going to happen in Texas. And you definitely don't think it's going to happen at the hospital that you work at. And in mid-2022, someone comes up to me and they tell me that they just implanted a puberty blocking device in a pre-adolescent child for gender dysphoria who had all these psychiatric issues. who, you know, had multiple family members who were transgender, which would raise obvious warning signs. And I couldn't believe it that Texas Children's Hospital was doing it. And when I looked into the program, I saw that statement from March of 2022 saying that they were going to shut down the program because of the legal risks. And I really couldn't believe it at first. I didn't believe that the biggest children's hospital in the world would be willing to lie to the public and pursue this behind closed doors. But the more I looked into it, the more I realized that's exactly what was happening.
And this is just so disgusting, frankly, because these are medical interventions. And you're the doctor, of course, not me, but my understanding is that, you know, a medical intervention is something that is designed as a procedure to go in and basically intervene, as the word intervention would suggest, that is not the regular course of biology. And so, for example, an abortion is a medical intervention that abruptly ends a pregnancy rather than a miscarriage, for example, which is different, that would be an unfortunate naturally occurring event that ends a pregnancy, but an abortion is a medical intervention. And so when we're talking about performing these transgender medical interventions, it's going in and abruptly trying to change the biology and change what would be the natural bodily functions and the natural state of a child's genitalia and all of these different instances. And so how damaging is this really when we're talking about implantable puberty blockers on minor children and some of these other surgeries that the left, of course, calls gender-affirming therapy, but we know from just a scientific perspective and an obvious reality perspective that this is causing damage and harm to children.
You know, you bring up such a good point about, like, changing natural biology, right? And you have to ask the question, well, what is the goal of medicine? Like, what would we define as a treatment? Why do we call it a therapy or treatment and not an intervention in the case of, like, an appendectomy or something else like chemotherapy for cancer? Whereas these, the proper definition is like an intervention. And you know, Aristotle wrote about this in his Nicomachean Ethics, and I think he had the best definition for it. Medicine is directed towards restoring and strengthening naturally occurring physiology. And whether you believe in God or whether you believe in evolution, there's a certain way that we are made, right? You have two lungs that breathe, you have a heart that pumps, you have legs that walk, fingers that grab. And we all know when we move away from that naturally occurring healthy state, because we know that something's off, like when you feel sick with the flu or you know, when you cut your leg. And anything we call medicine is meant to restore that natural order. So to answer your question about how harmful is this, you have to look at what's happening to these kids. When they begin puberty blockers at 9, 10, 11 years old, what's happening is they're being put into a state of permanent pathology. They're taken from their normal state, their normal hormonal balance, and that's being disrupted. And the path they're following is meant to disrupt that for the rest of their lives. They're meant to be chronic patients, chronic medical patients, until the day they die. And especially these puberty blockers affect every single system in your body. So people always think that it's less severe than these big surgeries like mastectomies or phalloplasties. But every single day, it's like a small microsurgery on your bones, your blood vessels, your brain. Because when you remove these hormones, it changes the entire physiological state of your body. And the severity of that cannot be, you know, minimized. I mean, it's changing the entire course of their existence.
Yeah, and this is just so tragic. And I'm speaking with Dr. Eitan Heim, who is a whistleblower for sex changes on minors in these procedures that are still being done, according to the whistleblower's documents at the Texas Children's Hospital. And so when we're talking about science and medicine, which is, you rightly described, the ethics. And I'm a huge fan now, because anybody who cites Nicomachean ethics is like a really great person in my book. But
great.
I love that book. But you know, as you're citing, the purpose of medicine is to restore the balance of health and to supplement what the body should be doing for itself when there's a breakdown or when there is a massive trauma or all of these other things. And so how are these advocates, like the hospital's former chief pediatrician, how are these advocates even trying to call this therapy instead of an intervention?
They're trying to call it therapy instead of an intervention by lying to us. That's the simple answer. They're lying, and they're censoring anyone who opposes them. But I would like to make one correction about something you mentioned earlier. According to the hospital, right now they have stopped these interventions because when, you know, once I realized that the hospital was lying, you know, I saw that the directors of a program that supposedly didn't exist, you know, were given opportunity to speak at the hospital's most prestigious lecture series, right? And you had social workers, you know, members of the transgender clinic, talking about how they were concealing what they were doing from public health authorities by not documenting, you know, consults and instead calling them into these people, which is like an egregious violation of medical ethics. So once it became obvious that the hospital was lying, and I reached out to journalists, our story came out on May 16th, 2023, and then it was perfect timing because a day later, the Texas Senate was voting on SB 14. This was a law that was going to ban all of these interventions in children. And because our story came out the day before, multiple Democrats had voted in favor of it because they didn't know this kind of thing was happening in their districts. So because that law was passed about a week and a half later, the CEO of the hospital says that he's shutting down the program. And so I take them at their word, even though they had lied before, just over a year before that. So according to them, they have stopped these interventions in accordance with the law.
Okay. So, and that timeline makes a lot more sense. And I appreciate that correction, because we want to get this story correct in terms of what's actually happening, not just what has been reported. And so there's also, though, a headline that I've seen that you are now under investigation for exposing this, and under federal investigation. And so can you talk about that, or is that something, you know, that's currently being being litigated, or, you know, where are you at in terms of whistleblower protections?
Well, I've thrown caution to the wind in this case, and I'll explain why. So in that story that Christopher Ruffo released in May of 2023, I was just the anonymous whistleblower. And the story gets all these headlines, the law gets passed. I mean, this is something that I never imagined would have been possible. So we win in every way I could have imagined. So things, you know, go quiet after that. And a month later, I was graduating from my surgical residency. And this is one of the most important days of my life, right? It's when you graduate from your training, you know, it's a culmination of all this work you had done over the past 5 years, right? You sacrifice so much that the day you graduate is a really big deal. So it was June 23rd, 2023, a month after the story. And at this point, I'm still anonymous. It's a Friday around 11, 12 in the early afternoon. We're getting ready for the ceremony later that night. My family's in town. We're about to meet with them. And then all of a sudden, I get an aggressive knock on the door. I shuffle over, open it, and find two federal agents standing outside. They tell me that they're with Health and Human Services. They show me their badges and that they're investigating a case regarding medical records. And at that moment, you know, my mind just kind of shuts down. But there was like this deep, primitive part of me that understood exactly what was happening, because it wasn't that much of a mystery. A month before, when we had released that story, we had challenged this dominant political ideology. And if I can be an anonymous whistleblower and we can succeed in this way, then how many other doctors or nurses would do the same thing too? So So they were there to make an example out of me. And I knew this. It made sense. And at that point, there was enough case material to see how the Department of Justice had become weaponized against regular people, right? Like when someone challenges dominant political ideologies, you know, the DOJ creates the perception of this crime. They threaten these severe penalties. And they do this in order to convince the person to comply with this investigation that everyone knows is phony. And the person being targeted believes that their innocence is their best defense, but they don't realize that when they're being targeted by a corrupt DOJ, it's the fact that they're innocent, the fact that they're virtuous, that they're being targeted in the first place. So all this was going through my mind, right? And, you know, so I invite these people in because I didn't know what to do. It was very awkward standing in the doorway. And we sit down, and they want to interview me. And they pull out their tripod, their camera, and all that. And then my wife comes out. My wife is a lawyer, and she had actually been hired as an assistant U.S. attorney at the Department of Justice in the Northern District of Texas. And that's an important part for the later in the story. But we had not mentioned that to them. So she sits down, and we both look at each other, and, you know, we excuse ourselves. So we go to our bedroom, and, you know, we talk, and we, you know, we knew it was a bad idea to talk to them without an attorney present because we knew what they were doing was corrupt. So we go back out and we tell them that, I won't talk to them without an attorney. And they say, okay. And then they hand me a target letter informing me that I was a potential target of a criminal investigation. And it was signed by an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of Texas. So the agents walk out, the door closes, and we knew that at that moment, our lives would be changed forever. But we had a decision to make. I had a decision. Do we fight or do we comply? And I knew that I had to fight because they came to my door that day to intimidate, to instill fear. They wanted to make an example out of me in order to prevent other whistleblowers from coming out. But that day, as they're coming to find out, they knocked on the wrong door. And everything, you know, that I talked about with weaponization of the DOJ and the corruption, you know, all that belief, it sounds out there. It sounds like a crazy thing for the average listener. But that was only vindicated in the next couple of months once we really experienced the degree of the corruption at DOJ. And that was outlined in a letter my attorneys had sent to Congress.
And let's pause here. We're gonna take a break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Eitan Heim, who is a whistleblower with this very important and very dramatic story that, unfortunately, a lot of conservatives are experiencing. I mean, this is becoming almost commonplace to get the knock on your door that no conservative wants. And so we'll be right back to talk more about this story here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back, and I am speaking with Dr. Eitan Heim, who is a whistleblower in the state of Texas on these sex changes and medical interventions, not gender-affirming therapy, in the state of Texas in some of these hospitals that at least previously have been doing this, and they've now said that they've stopped. But we were right in the middle of this story when we had to take the break. Dr. Heim, about, you know, the FBI, you were saying, you know, or the DOJ, you know, came in and they knocked on the wrong door, because later on, you have been vindicated through this. So continue your story and, why you decided to stand up and to fight this for the truth.
Yeah. Well, I knew that if I didn't fight, that I would just be passing this conflict on to my future children, to future generations. So I knew that I had to do something about it because I have to fight for my profession, but also fight for my future children in this country, because if they're able to do this, I don't want to deliver them into a world where if they stand up and they do the right thing, that they're going to be targeted by the most powerful federal Leviathan in human history. So I knew I had to do something, right? So we spend that weekend getting legal counsel, and we get in touch with a attorney by the name of Marcella Burke. Christopher Rufo puts us in touch with her, and she's this, strict Catholic, rosary in one hand, middle finger in the other, bulldog of an attorney, and she's amazing. She was a little crazy, she kind of freaked me out in the beginning, but we knew that she was like the perfect person because she was a fighter, and she knew that this was as much political as it was legal. I mean, the whole thing is political. There's nothing legal because no legal statute had been violated. But so over the next couple of months, we realized how much corruption had been occurring. And this was because of the communications my attorneys had with the prosecutor. And these what they had said to my attorneys was so shocking that they were compelled to blow the whistle in their own sense, right? To write a letter to Congress to outline this misconduct so that so that they can hold the DOJ accountable. And just to give you a few examples of what that means, like what they had outlined, they found out that this prosecutor had initiated this investigation without ever reviewing the evidence, right? They had sent agents to my apartment on the day of my graduation, one of the most important days, without ever looking at what had happened, right? And early on in their conversations, this prosecutor had threatened my wife, right? Because she knew that my wife had been hired as an assistant U.S. attorney and was undergoing a background check. So even though she didn't look into the details of the case, she looked into, our background enough to find out that my wife was undergoing a background check because she had just been hired. And she had mentioned during one of those conversations that, my wife Andrea won't have any problems unless she starts to become difficult, because, somehow she had interfered with this federal investigation by encouraging me to utilize my constitutional right to have an attorney present, right? And they even said that even if I didn't break any law, they would find a technicality to pursue me on, to make my name public, so that these other doctors who I had exposed could sue me civilly and destroy my life. She said I had no right to blow the whistle. If I wanted to do something like this, I should have stood on the sidewalk and held a sign. And after understanding how far this corruption went within DOJ, I knew that I had to do something about it. Like, I had to fight against this. And that's why I took my story public. And that's why my attorneys had really sacrificed a huge amount in their own careers to do this, because very likely they're going to be targeted in the same way. I mean, there's a huge risk to them too, but yeah. They have to protect they have to preserve their profession just like I have to. So,
let me ask this, Dr. Heim, because I agree with you. I mean, all of these, this lawfare that is targeting conservatives, targeting, pro-life advocates, the medical profession overall, targeting a lot, all of the parental rights. I mean, everything that encompasses all of these issues. Lawfare is basically a political process designed to produce a legal outcome. It's not a legal process that is designed to actually capture what a criminal statute is intended for. And so this has become political. And so are you facing any sort of issue with the medical board in terms of your medical license? Because I know even in the state of Texas, there have been a number of doctors who, for example, prescribed hydroxychloroquine during the COVID pandemic, who've actually lost their license just for making determinations in the best interests of their patients. Is that something that you're facing as well?
There are signs of it, early signs of it, and it's has to do with my credentialing. But we're looking into that right now, and we're trying to figure out if this is really retaliation. So it's possible, and I think likely. But they just have to know that if they do, we're coming full force to challenge it. Because, you know, we've seen this enough with other cases that if we don't fight against this, then we will be destroyed. And I feel like many times when people find themselves in a situation like this, they feel completely powerless. But there was something that I realized, something that like I had, you know, you feel so powerless, but you realize that the only way this whole thing becomes legitimate is by my own willingness, because they know this is corrupt. I know this is corrupt, and they know that I know it. And in order for this whole thing to appear legitimate, they need me to play the role of like an accused criminal. And they need me to pretend like they're just pursuing the law and that this isn't lawfare and they're not weaponizing their authority. So the only legitimacy they have is that which we provide to them. And in this case, I'm not going to provide them any of that legitimacy because they have told us that right? They have revealed their own misconduct, that they have exceeded beyond the boundaries of their positions to pursue this investigation for political purposes. You know, that's essentially what they had admitted to us. So when anyone finds themselves in this position, they have to fight back against it. And that's what I'm realizing, how so many people are ready to stand up and fight for this thing, to sacrifice. And we see that with how many people have donated to our legal fund, because we're not only pursuing defense in this situation, but we're going on the offense, because this case is meaningless unless we hold these people accountable for what they've done. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah, really well said. And and I know that there are so many people who are facing those particular challenges and standing up for the truth. And, you know, the truth can sometimes be complicated, but the truth is that you should always stand up for the truth, even when facing, you know, these types of intimidation tactics and other sorts of things. And so where are you at right now in terms of not only potential whistleblower protections, and you can mention, you know, your legal defense fund, how people can support that, and where you are at with this entire fight?
So we had, I hadn't came out as a whistleblower, but you know, there's a problem because there's a difference between a state whistleblower and whether the federal government is willing to recognize that. So of course, if they don't want to recognize that, they're not going to recognize it, and they're just going to treat you like a criminal, right? Like they've done so many times to other people. So, of course, we have to fight back. And we have a Give, Send, Go that's set up. It's givesendgo.com/Texas_whistleblower. And we've raised a lot of money, and so many people have donated to the cause. And it means, I mean, it. Every night, my wife and I, we read the comments, and it's the most meaningful thing, you know, I've ever experienced in my life, because you see how much this means to people, and it gives us so much strength, and it's amazing. But where it's not only a legal fund for defense, but for offense, because we had sent our letter to the House, to the Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Department of Justice, to Jim Jordan. And we did it through Chip Roy, one of the representatives in Texas. And these guys are amazing, and their help is so much appreciated. But, you know, so we're pursuing efforts to obtain accountability, to make sure that we can pursue the levers that we have access to so that this doesn't happen again to other people. Because if this is allowed to stand, then there will be no way for doctors and nurses to blow the whistle in the future, because they know that if they do, they're going to be targeted by the federal Leviathan and be destroyed. So we cannot let that happen.
Really well said. And, you know, a lot of these issues are a lot more complicated than just what, you know, the media tries to suggest, or what, you know, kind of some of our siloed echo chambers would like to suggest. And, you know, for the people who are actually in these situations, you know, you're the one that has to make the determination to stand firm on the truth and understanding what the truth actually is. And I know that there have been a lot of, you know, reports, even just in what I was looking at, you know, some of these other outlets that are clearly leftist that are trying to suggest that, you know, you did something wrong or that, you know, there are other complicating factors. And this is why it's so important that people understand where you and others are standing for the truth, even though, you know, they may not necessarily, you know, agree with certain positions or whatever, you know, you're standing firm. And that's ultimately what matters, because we are in a battle for the truth and to ensure that justice is not perverted in a lot of these ways. And so I commend you for standing up and for being a whistleblower, even though now you have been targeted, of course. And so, you know, for other doctors then, in just the last few minutes I have with you, Dr. Heim, for other doctors who are considering standing up, but maybe they're saying, you know, I don't want to be targeted by this. And, you know, maybe at least I'm not participating in this kind of medical intervention. And so even though, you know, my hospital may be doing it, you know, that's not in my lane. You know, a lot of people would like to put it off and say, you know, that's not what I'm being faced with personally. So I don't necessarily want to stand up. What would be, from your experience, your encouragement to other doctors who may be seeing some of these similar types of surgeries and medical interventions that are devastating to minor children, and their obligation to stand up for the truth?
You know, what's happening now is that this whole transgender facade, this house of cards, is starting to crumble. And we see that you know, with this recent announcement from the NHS in England to halt puberty blockers as routine care, because, of course, they have no evidence and they're profoundly dangerous. So there's going to be a point in the future where people ask, well, how did this happen? Like, how was it that so many doctors were silent when this was happening? So doctors have to make the decision now that they have to speak out against it, because in the future, people are going to look back and say, like, how could people have ever let this happen? This is one of the greatest medical controversies in human history. So when people in the future ask, you know, doctors, like, what did they do about it? You have to have an answer. Because if you don't, if you just stood silent while this was happening and just pretended like I had no responsibility because it wasn't my lane, then you're going to have to live with that shame for the rest of your life. And to think that you have to look in the mirror every day and think that you did nothing, like, that's a very hard thing to live with. And people can think that they can ignore it and they could just go on, but it's going to eat them up inside. And especially in the future, when people look back and understand how bad all of this really was.
Yeah. And we are going to have to confront this as a society and as a culture, and also as the church, you know, here at AFR. I mean, I know everyone listening, for the most part, our regular listeners are Christians, and, you know, believe in the dignity of human life and the inherent truth about the reality to which God has presented us, that every human being has that intrinsic value because we are made in God's image. And for a culture and for these medical doctors that are perverting what God has created, there will be consequences, and we will have to confront that as a society and also as the church, to say that, you know, if we have turned a blind eye to this, or if we are not actively trying to protect the weakest among us, this is why we are ardent pro-life advocates. This is why we are ardent conservatives, you know, against these types of medical interventions. And so, Dr. Heim, thank you so much for joining, for telling your story, and for encouraging others to stand up for the truth where they see these perversions, and do as much as they can, the best that they can. That's all the time that we have here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Make it a great weekend. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. We
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.